Rose.
Welcome back to another episode of Sean and Ed's Do Baseball.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Ed's.
And we are doing the baseball history.
That's right. We're a bi-weekly baseball history podcast where the story catcher doesn't know what the story pitcher is out on the mound throwing them.
Yeah, and that can be fun sometimes. You don't know what's coming.
That's kind of, we figured out that that's a weird metaphor for this story, but anyway, we're not going to harp on that too much.
Yeah, they have whole meetings about what they're going to throw.
Yeah.
We don't.
Yeah, no, we don't. We don't plan it at all.
No planning.
I mean, solo planning, but anyway.
Either way, where can people find us?
People can find us on Twitter at Doing Baseball and on Instagram and TikTok at Doing.Baseball. And at various platforms listening, you've obviously found us on one of them, but we got to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music and Podbean. I think even maybe like a Samsung thing or something. I don't know.
We're everywhere.
We got a few streaming.
Are we on YouTube?
We are on the tube, actually.
We're on YouTube. Check us out on YouTube. Wherever you check us out.
Forget that we're on YouTube sometimes.
We really need to lean into this. We need to do some visuals and stuff. Yeah. When nobody wants to.
We're listening. We're listening.
We're listening. Either way, yeah. I'm on Twitter at Sean Do Baseball. Wherever you're listening to us, however you're listening to us, thank you. And if you could give us a review, give us a rating, that would be fantastic. Want to give a shout out to Two Loons Brewing, our sponsor. Check out Two Loons Brewing at twoloonsbrewing.com. If you're in Toronto or Ontario, you can find their beers at the LCBO. You can also hopefully find them at local beer festivals. Summer's coming, and a brick and mortar location hopefully opening very soon. Mm-hmm. And as always,
please be of legal drinking age, and of course, please enjoy responsibly.
And I was waiting for you to say that.
Why?
Because we're not talking about enjoying
again
beer responsibly.
Oh, geez. Last time you told a story, we were talking about not enjoying substances responsibly.
I guess I kind of used that same transition.
Exactly the same segue, my friend.
This one's more fun.
Okay.
This is more fun. So, Ed, I'll ask you a question I already know the answer to. Are you familiar with The Simpsons?
The yellow family on television?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Yeah, yes, sir. In Simpsons history, what is the first baseball Simpsons episode?
Well, I think it's... Oh, wait. Nah, it's the one... It's the power plant one.
No? I mean, it involves a power plant.
Okay. I don't know then. I thought it was the 92 City Champs, like where it's the Springfield versus Shelbyville power plants. It's weird to have two towns next to each other with nuclear plants. But anyway,
it was the 90s. Yeah. No, this is actually premiered on November 8th, 1990.
Season 1.
Season 2.
Oh,
shit. Episode 5. Ooh. And it was called Dancing Homer.
Dancing Homer. Oh, I know this one. This is the, like, San Diego Chicken style one.
Sure. San Diego Chicken. Come on, Edsy. So, one night at Moe's, Homer's drinking buddies ask him what happened in Capital City. Through a series of flashbacks, he recounts his recent adventures, beginning with the nuclear plant employee night at a local minor league baseball stadium. Mm-hmm. Homer hopes to get plastered on Duff at the ballpark, but it's ruined because Mr. Burns and Smithers sit next to him. But to his surprise, Mr. Burns buys him several rounds of beer to show good company relations, and they are soon enjoying the game together, with the Springfield Isotopes down by 3 runs, and inebriated Homer excites the crowd with an impromptu dance that involves spelling the team name with his body and rallies the team to victory. Homer then gets scouted to go to Capital City and do his routine in the big leagues. Uh-huh. But his routine falls flat, and the Simpsons move back to Springfield. So,
disappointed.
That is not exactly based on a real person. but it is.
Okay.
Because William Grover Hagee was born on June 17th, 1939 in Edgemere, Maryland. Hagee would grow up in neighboring Sparrows Point, about 20 minutes east of downtown Baltimore.
Okay.
Hagee attended Sparrows Point High School and began attending Orioles games with his father during the team's first season in 1954. He fell in love with the team, which had relocated to Baltimore after decades in St. Louis as the Browns. Mm-hmm. And the Browns sucked.
Yeah.
They just were terrible.
Just quick aside. I think that was Bill Veeck wanted to sell them or something or move them somewhere else.
Probably.
And they were like, no. And then they made him sell the team, and he sold the team. And then that team owner immediately was allowed to move them.
Yes.
And Bill Veeck was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the Browns are like a joke of a franchise. But they move to Baltimore and become the Orioles. The first year was not much different than the Browns' last in St. Louis. Both years the team finished 54 and 100. But the Hagee family watched the franchise grow into a powerhouse. The franchise finally turned the corner in 1960 and continued to add talent on the field and wins in the standings. From 1960 to 1965, the Orioles averaged 90 wins per season, but still came up short in the standings. Then it happened. In 1966, the Orioles won the American League pennant and shit-kicked the Dodgers in a World Series sweep. Frank Robinson was MVP of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
He's very good.
Very good. And the glory days in you know, this team... The Browns franchise, which sucked for so many years. It's like their first World Series ever.
Yeah.
I didn't
realize that they... I don't know why I didn't know. Anyway, I didn't know that they had won in 66. I thought their first was in, what, 70?
Yeah, we'll get to it. Anyway. So there's a poor finish in 1967, but the team continued to roll into the late 60s, now under the infamous Earl Weaver. The Orioles returned to the World Series So they returned to the World Series 3 years in a row from 1969 to 1971. Mm-hmm. They lost two of them, but defeated the Reds in 1970. There you got that one. Mm-hmm. To bring Baltimore their second championship in 5 years. The St. Louis Browns could only have dreamed of the success the O's were having, and the Orioles fan base grew, but Baltimore was still more or less a football town.
Okay.
Interesting.
Colts.
Yeah, with the Colts back then. The team returned to the playoffs in 1973 and 1974 and continued to be good, finishing second in the East from 1975 to 1977. With such a long stretch of winning baseball, O's fans, I don't want to call them spoiled, but, you know, they're getting spoiled at this point.
They've had like a decade of sustained success. I mean, they've won two World Series. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
10 year stretch.
You're finishing first or second for basically 12, 13 years.
Yeah. You know, which is a much bigger deal at that point.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Because, you know, only if you finish first, you make the playoffs or, you know, in the AL East. But they lost to Oakland a few times in the playoffs. But, you know, they're not making the playoffs from 75 to 77, but they're finishing second, right? Mm-hmm. They're runner-up in the East every year.
Yeah.
So at least they have September games to be cheering for. And, you know, as you said, it's a bigger deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so they're good, but they're just getting a little like, ah. And then a hero emerged, William Grover Hagee, as they called him Wild Bill.
I love this guy already.
So Bill always sat in section 34 of the upper deck at Memorial Stadium. He was just a regular guy in his 30s. He'd driven an ice cream truck and an ambulance before settling into a career as a cab driver. Bill was scruffy to say the least, with a large bushy beard, big 70s glasses, and most likely a fuck ton of back hair.
Okay. I'm picturing Jerry Garcia.
Yeah.
But bigger.
Fair. Think of it's like kind of like more like Macho Man vibes mixed with Jerry Garcia.
Okay,
there you go.
I got you.
Yeah, so Wash Angels.
Earlier than Jerry Garcia, that's what we're saying. Maybe similar Harry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Washington Post journalist Lawrence Rocha described seeing Wild Bill as a kid. And I quote, "He was as big as a moose, with a beard like a shredded burlap, and a gut like a bathtub. He did not walk on steady feet."
Okay. So this guy's huge then.
Huge. Yeah,
I'm not picturing Jerry Garcia anymore.
Okay. I didn't know how big Jerry Garcia was. I don't think he's
a very big guy.
Okay. Well, but remember, it's from a kid's really eyes. Know, it's from a kid's eyes.
That's true, too, buddy. But like, when you said the gut the size of a bathtub.
He's tall. Know.
I also like the descriptiveness of a beard of shredded burlap.
Dude, this Lawrence Rocha or Rocha, their article in the Washington Post, I'd read it. Like, it's from 1992. Great. It's a really fun read. He's a very good writer. So Bill at first was just like every other fan. He liked going to the game and drinking beer with his friends. His work as a cabbie gave him the flexibility to when to stop work, which is normally around 3 or 4 o'clock. He'd meet his friends at a local dive bar called Ed's Inn.
Nice.
So what nice.
A great place.
There, they would have some beers, then fill up a cooler with Budweiser's and head to the ballpark. And that was allowed.
Yeah.
You just walk in with your
fucking... You just picnic lunch your case.
In yeah. There. Well, right. And like it's not... Even if they're like, yeah, bring your beers. Like, mm-hmm. Enjoy your beers. Yep. You have like 80 beers with you? Good work.
Yeah. I don't understand the logistics, but that's not our problem.
That must be heavy getting it up there. And Section 34 was where Wild Bill and his friends religiously perched with their coolers full of beer at Memorial Stadium. Memorial was originally a football stadium, and the section was just a bunch of metal bench seats that sat in the upper deck by the right field foul pole.
Mm-hmm. I've seen pictures of old Memorial Stadium, and it looks steep as shit.
Yeah. And so it's like the super cheap seats.
Yeah.
Like, it's the upper deck, it's down the right field line in foul territory, but like close to the foul pole, and that's where they all sat. And soon, Section 34 turned into more than a section, but almost an appendage of the team. The section was what could only be described as fun to some and maybe a nightmare to others.
Okay. Rowdy, it's like the 10th man.
Yeah, rowdy fans, beer, Jack Daniels, cigarettes, peanut fights, and loud cheers led by the big-bodied Wild Bill. Drunk as fuck, wearing a tank top, cutoffs, high socks, and a straw hat.
It's like giving me like Escape from New York vibes, where they've got like Section 34 is like the prison section.
So he is getting noticed that there's a big section, and he's a boisterous big fan with a big voice, and. Wild Bill, though, basically, the old saying is what? Like, good artists borrow, great artists steal. He didn't really steal this, because what happened was, Bill will tell you, he started spelling out Orioles with his body, the same as Homer Simpson does with the isotopes.
Okay.
And this wasn't an original thing that Wild Bill came up with. In fact, there was a guy already at Colts games spelling Colts with his body. But Hagee will just
tell you. Like, further.
Yeah, he asked permission.
He's like, this is a longer word. I'm going to show you up, buddy.
Well, no, he actually asked permission to do it.
Oh, okay.
So I'll quote from the Washington Post article. Hagee said, "I got the idea from a guy at the Colts game. The big wheel, they called him. He was doing Colts letters, and I ran into him at a party and asked him how come he doesn't come out and do the Oriole letters like that. I said I thought it would be...
I don't know how to spell that.
That's a lot of letters, man. Continue. I said I thought it would be a great idea, and he said he wasn't much of a baseball fan. So I told him, well, if you don't mind, I'll take the franchise over. You know... We were drinking a little bit and all that. See, that the whole thing, you know, basically I'm pretty much a quiet person. But, you know, when you have a few beers in you or whatever, things happen.
Listen, man, have you ever considered franchising your act? Because I'll buy one of those franchises for $40 right now. Oh. You got a deal, sir. You can spell Orioles at the games all you want. I can't even make an R. Right now, so.
I can teach you a pretty mean O. Yeah, yeah. The quote continues.
I feel like O is the hardest one.
Yeah. The quote continues, a lot of people like my dentist, you know, he was a good friend of mine and all that, but he couldn't understand how I could get out there and drink all that much and still do what I did. I just explained to him, I said, let's face it, if I didn't drink, I just wouldn't do it.
It wasn't a dentist, it was actually his doctor being like, you shouldn't drink this much, man. Why are you telling me this? Just work on my teeth. You were
we're best friends. Me and you, yeah. Sir, you're my patient. Yeah. With that, Wild Bill began an Orioles tradition. He'd run to the front of Section 34, contorting his body to spell Orioles, and his loyal Section 34 followers would yell out the letters. So just as Homer does on that, he's like, he's just this giant drunk dude and everyone's cheering. It's actually very underwhelming when you see it.
You see videos of it, it's like, oh, that's way less cool than I imagined it.
So I couldn't find a perfect...
Doesn't look like an R at all. This guy needs to study.
It's not what I'm saying. But anyways, I couldn't find a perfect timeline, but definitely by 1978... They were getting noticed, and 1979 was definitely their time to shine. The Orioles were good, but the days of regular trips to the World Series less than a decade earlier seemed to be far away. The team was for sale, and there was even worry about relocation. They were good, but they weren't drawing as much as, this is a football town. But Orioles magic was about to be born. The Orioles went 3-8 to start the year, but went on a 26-6 run and never looked back. With the help of Section 34, there were many memorable wins, including a few improbable walk-off wins in June that started what's known as Oriole Magic. So they're just, it's a giant stadium. There's, 10 to 20,000 people there per game, even though the team's fucking great. And so when Section 34... is up in this corner and it's more populated than most other, and they get cheering.
Yeah.
They're getting noticed. It's
like this one pocket of really loud people up in the corner.
And in June they have four or five walk off, come from behind, three run home runs, down 5-3.
Like throwing kegs over the balcony and shit.
You just absolutely saw the future of where this is going in a weird way.
No. Sorry to jump ahead there. Yeah.
But
they can bring it is BYOB.
Yeah. So they
what
just
a crazy time.
They just can't lose and they keep walking off. So in June 22nd, they call it the Orioles magic starts. But really, I was looking through the season. I was like, wow, there's a lot of fucking impressive walk-off or come-from-behind victories here. So all of a sudden, the team is gaining more attention because they're in first place, and Wild Bill is gaining more attention. And Memorial Stadium is beginning to fill with people wanting to go to fucking Section 34 and see what's going on up there. Bill was not just being noticed by the fans, but by the players as well. The Orioles bullpen down in right field would encourage Bill and Section 34 to cheer in certain moments. So especially Rick Dempsey and I hope I say this, Doug DeCinces, often stood in the dugout. They'd wave a towel with 34 on it.
Hey, Bill!
Yeah.
Get crazy!
Yeah. So there's
Bill would oblige.
He would. And Jim Palmer would later say, for a team that didn't draw very well, it was very refreshing to see someone who actually came out to the ballpark and generated interest.
They're like, come on, fans. Come on out and see our other fans.
He's really drunk.
Yeah. We'll see how Wild Bill is when you come on down here, folks. He's wild, I'm telling you.
So Wild Bill's larger than life. He's wearing a t-shirt that says Wild Bill on it now.
Now he's advertising.
Yeah, he's gained notoriety as the Orioles won games. The New York Times interviewed him in July 83, and my favorite part is this. So I quote, once there was a cheer that went, come on, Reg, hit it in the hedge. That was before Reggie Jackson left town. Wild Bill spoke with a beer in each hand. He could have been a god in Baltimore, he said. If you run into him, tell him Wild Bill said so.
Tell him old Wild Bill resents him leaving town. I had a great cheer. It was a great cheer.
Come on, Reg. Hit it in the hedge.
You'll see how much of a genius I am, Reggie.
That's the kind of underwhelming cheer that this is all based around. We were not. It was ridiculous. So it was.
He's overly proud of a very simple rhyming structure.
The pandemonium. It was pandemonium in all the best ways. It was debaucherous but fun with Howard Schwartz, who was an usher and supervisor for Section 34, saying the drunk regulars in the section were not an issue at all, and it was the high school kids that were the ones who created more problems with drinking. It's like those people are.
They can't handle their liquor. We're totally fine.
Those people are seasoned alcoholics. Yeah. It's the kids we need to worry about. Yeah. So
get the kids some coffee. That should fix things.
Yeah. So, Wild Bill becomes as much a fixture as Earl Weaver in Baltimore. And by the end of the year, Hagee would be leading his drunken cheers from atop the Orioles' dugout instead of just Section 34.
Oh, shit. They brought him down.
And in the Orioles' locker room.
Oh, no. That is insane.
So, yeah, he starts coming down. His friends are like, hey, like, he told me he was going to go take a piss, and now he's dancing on the dugout down there.
How did he get down there? Is that Bill?
It's Bill. So the Orioles won the AL East. They defeated the Angels 3-1 in the ALCS to take the pennant. And after the victory, Wild Bill was invited into the locker room by Weaver. Wild Bill led the Orioles' champagne celebration, spelling out Orioles with his body as the team popped champagne and screamed out the letters. When he finished, Earl Weaver shouted, "One more time!" And there was an encore.
It's getting like a little Charlie Faust-ish.
It's like, absolutely just debauched, like just alcohol.
Yeah.
So the O's and Hagee were off to the World Series against the Pirates. At this point, I'm pretty sure you can buy the Wild Bill t-shirts and stuff. The Orioles invite Wild Bill down onto the dugout to dance, you know, game one and shit like that, or whatever. At the first home game, he's like on the stadium or on the dugout before the game, getting everybody hyped up. The whole stadium followed his every move as he set the tone. And the series started as a success for the Orioles until it all fell apart. The Orioles won the first game at home and went up 3-1 in the series, but their bats went quiet. The O's would only score 2 runs combined in the last 3 games and lose Game 7 despite Wild Bill's best efforts. The team were still hailed as heroes after the season, and Wild Bill was, of course, included in the public celebration for the losing team. I'll quote from the New York Times here. The fans stepped into the streets to shake hands with 20 or so players who appeared, and the parade was slowed because of the cars carrying the players had trouble getting through the crowd. Other fans leaned out of windows and emptied trash baskets onto the street until it was ankle deep with waste paper. I guess that's a celebration and not littering.
I guess. I thought it was like, you guys didn't win. You guys are trash.
Boo. Yeah. The air on one corner was filled with confetti as fine as sawdust and sure to be trapped in Dan Stanhouse's fuzzy hair. No, but no matter how much he tried to shake it out. And
everything else.
Yeah. At City Hall, Brooks Robinson, the former Baltimore third baseman, helped introduce players. Rick Dempsey, the catcher, stepped up to the microphone and sang, "Take me out to the ball game." Wild Bill Hagee, the team's cheerleader, took time off from his two-day appearance at an automobile and truck discount center and led one last series of O-R-I-O-L-E-S cheers.
What a career this guy's like carved out for himself, making like appearances at fucking car dealerships and stuff just because he was a crazy drunk guy. Like, it's amazing.
Just the regular cabbie.
Like what a different time.
And this is also a big deal because this is like a turning point for the Orioles franchise because they were getting new ownership that year, and ownership had already been threatening relocation if attendance didn't improve. We talked about there was not a big drawing team, even though they were really fucking good. Mm-hmm. Well, it did, and it continued to grow, led by Wild Bill and his drunken compatriots. Attendance rose from 1 million to nearly 1.8 million the next 2 years as people wanted to be a part of Orioles magic and get a real-life glimpse at Wild Bill. The team continued to win. In 1980, they won 100 games but missed the playoffs. I think the Yankees won 103 or something. Mm-hmm. Wild Bill was still a huge draw and was probably signing more autographs than the players were. Everywhere he went in the stadium, he was stopped and had to get the ushers to start cutting off people from lining up to meet him as he sat in Section 34 trying to actually watch the game.
It's so weird. Like, he could go sit somewhere else.
No. That's where he goes with his friends and his beer. True. Orioles catcher Rick Dempsey was one of Hagee's biggest fans, and he would sometimes join him in the dugout to lead cheers.
So Dempsey gets up on the dugout too.
Dempsey later said, "I just remember how much control he had over the crowd. In an area where the Orioles were on fire, he turned the crowd on fire."
It just seems like all these stories like make MLB seem like, at least not so much now, but like it's not the most beer league sport, but like all these like stories from back in the day was pretty, so it just seemed like a very glorified beer league a lot of the time.
I think basically the 70s into like mid 80s is the most beer league time.
Yeah.
We got to talk. There's the 1890s, Jesus.
But
either way.
Sidetracked here.
We do. There's always the downswing. So in 1981, there was a strike in baseball, if you recall. Mm-hmm. And Wild Bill does exactly what you'd expect him to do, Edsy.
Goes on strike?
No, he gets arrested for being drunk in public and blames it on there being no baseball.
That's not what I expected. But okay. It's not surprising me now that I'm hearing it.
Yeah, so from
it's the... Like, listen, if I had an outlet to go get drunk at, then I wouldn't have to be drunk in public, and you wouldn't have to deal with me.
From the UPI,
it's the strike's fault.
From the UPI archives, Hagee, a 42-year-old cab driver, blamed the incident on Major League Baseball strike. "I miss baseball dearly. It's a big part of my life. It's a heck of a void to have to fill," Hagee said Monday after he was arrested at 2:20 a.m.
on my Monday. Life's work.
So he basically just, like, he gets an open carry thing and just is drunk and shitty to the police, so they arrest him instead of just being like, hey. So he's the police say he's uncooperative, and they probably are dicks to him, too. So, yeah.
Wild Bill, it says right here on my shirt.
I'm allowed to be drunk.
Read my shirt.
If anybody's allowed to be drunk on a Monday at 2:20 a.m. So Wild Bill was as big in Baltimore as Brooke Robinson, who would also give Section 34 a shout-out during his 1982 induction ceremony. In 1982, though, the Orioles would have another amazing season, with it coming down to the wire. And Section 34 cheered on their team vehemently as ever. They went 6-3 down the stretch, but lost on game 162 and missed the playoffs by one game. They were never had a lead, but they played well enough down the stretch that I think mathematically they might have been able to make it if they had won the last day and Detroit lost or something. Anyways, it sounded like Wild Bill was a true fan, though, and didn't let things like winning or losing get to him. It's all about the ride. He was a big dick.
I'm just hammered. I don't look at the scoreboard at all. I just basically carry a case down to the park every day.
Now, it's funny that you mentioned Jerry Garcia, because like, he is a huge deadhead.
Okay.
He's like, he's just maybe a very...
He modeled his look after.
Well, and he's just a very, like, just, well, you win some, you lose some. Like, you know, he's very, you know,
super zen about it.
Yeah, but in news, he's like, oh, of course we're going to beat the Red Sox today. Like, of course. Like, they can't play on the field. It's us. And then they lose. And he's, well, you know, another game tomorrow. It's all good. And,
he knows where his bread's buttered.
Well, and also just like, that's how baseball fans should be. So it was all about having a good time and drinking beer. Wild Bill ran into trouble again with the law in 1983, got arrested for smoking pot with some friends in a parking lot. But it's not like smoking weed was going to really like tarnish this guy's reputation.
No, if anything, you'd be like, he's so wild. That wild lettuce.
So the same year, the O's went back to the show. They won 98 games in front of more than 2 million fans now, then flattened the White Sox 3-1 in the ALCS. Wild Bill was there the whole time on top of the Orioles dugout for game one of the World Series again, controlling the crowd like a puppet master before launching into his famous body contorting Orioles cheer.
I gotta see this.
Yeah.
I gotta watch this after we're done.
This time the Orioles prevailed and took the series 4-1 over Philadelphia. Of course, Wild Bill was a part
of cheesesteaks.
Yeah. Wild Bill was a part of the public celebrations as he stood atop the flatbed in the championship parade. Baltimore baseball had hit its peak.
Mm-hmm.
Next year brought something not seen in a long time, a fifth place finish in the AL East.
For Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. No. What year is this now? 83 or 4?
84.
84.
Yeah, so they won the champion. They won. They lost in 79, but they won in 83.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
Haven't been pretty good since 66.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they 85 and 77 still, but that's like fifth place. Very good AL East that year, apparently.
Pretty good 20 year run.
Yeah. Still, Section 34 and Wild Bill led the way from right field, cheap seats, and kept the party going. But the Orioles brass began to have other ideas. Bob Brown, Orioles PR exec, would say, after a while, Bill started to become a pain in the rear. He wasn't exactly a role model anymore. Like, when was he?
Anymore?
When was he?
Society's changed.
The past 7 years has changed me.
Yeah, it's changed so drastically we can't be looking up to drunk assholes in the park anymore.
So then in
he hasn't washed his shirt in 7 years.
Bill, we just wash it. Just wash it.
No. You gotta wash it in beer?
It already smells like beer, Bill.
Stop pouring beer on yourself. Okay, sorry. Carry on.
So then in 1985, the Baltimore Orioles did something that Wild Bill could not forgive. They tried to force him to buy his own beer.
What a crime.
The team ownership claimed that the emphasis on alcohol at the game had begun to become an issue, and they did not want to fuel fan alcoholism.
I mean, makes sense. It's probably, I mean, good on them.
Nah, I mean, we'll get to it. There's another perspective here, but they basically are like, no, you can't bring your own alcohol anymore.
Yeah.
You can't. There's. It sounded like they were just like Jack Daniels, like 20 beers. Okay, let's go to the game.
Come on in. Yeah.
So they cut that off, and Wild Bill was pissed. He saw it as a cash grab by the owners, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a working class dude, Eds. He's just trying to get by. You know, it's cheaper to bring your own beers than to have to
That's
buy.
That's true. I guess, like, they didn't, like, set a limit that, like, you know, it wasn't like you couldn't buy 30 beers inside.
Yeah. So, on the last day, I'm not sure if it was the last day of the season or last day of the home game of the season or just the last day that you're allowed to bring your own beer, Wild Bill made his statement. This is 1985. He would later say...
Wait, on the last day, they were like, okay, make the last day BYOB.
Yeah, okay. It's still a cutoff date. Okay. Yeah. It's still set a cutoff
Bill's
date.
Bill's like waiting there salivating for the final day of the season.
So he would later say, I drank the 9 or 10 beers in the cooler, and then I just didn't have any use for it. So it went, so did I.
The cooler?
So what he means
cooler
by...
went?
So it went, then so did I, was while Bill was arrested for throwing his cooler from the upper deck onto the field.
Okay. Yeah, that's understandable. At least it made it to the field.
Well, yeah.
Thank goodness.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I wish
it's not good either way. I'm just saying, like, at least it made it to the field and probably didn't hurt anybody.
It did not hurt anybody. Because yeah. Wild Bill is arrested right after he does that. The same, like, Usher.
You know who I am? It's in my name. Yeah. It's in my nature to do wild things.
He's the Wild Bill's out of here.
No, here's my shirt. God, your shirt stinks, man.
So Wild Bill was done with the Orioles, and he would never return to Memorial Stadium, at least as Wild Bill.
Okay.
Without Bill, the Orioles immediately sucked, like, for a long time. Mm. They finished last in 1986. Like,
we don't even have a team identity anymore. We don't have that guy spelling out our name for us anymore.
We got this Cal Ripken guy. He's nothing.
He's no Wild Bill. What does his shirt smell like?
In 1991, the Orioles tried to bring him back to Memorial Stadium for one last game before the O's moved.
What year?
91. Okay. Before they moved to Camden Yards in 92.
Right. Okay.
Wild Bill said no. And I quote, "I didn't want anything to do with those guys. It wasn't the Baltimore Orioles. It wasn't the same organization anymore."
Oh, he's heartbroken.
Yeah. But soon after, if you recall, there's a new... ownership, Peter Angelos or whatever buys the team, and Bill begins to return to games at Camden Yards, and he's just a regular fan. He's just, you know, he's not wearing a Wild Bill t-shirt and fucking.
Mm-hmm. He's shaved.
No.
Oh, okay.
But once
his beard still looks like burlap.
Yeah, but it's been so long. People, you know, they're not looking for him. He just is able to blend in. Mm-hmm. I think also, you know, Camden Yards is much more intimate than Giant Memorial Stadium. So once or twice after a few beers, Wild Bill would run down the aisle, getting a cheer going, and few people recognizing him.
Like, that's Wild Bill.
But
that's Wild Bill. It's so good. The beer hits your lips.
He described Camden Yards as more of a Chardonnay than a beer environment.
Okay. He's grown up. He's classed it up now.
No, I think he doesn't like that it's a Chardonnay. Oh, okay. He's like, nah, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
It's not a, you know, I like beers, you know. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, they're all swanky now. And some pieces are like, oh, he hated it. But, like, there's an article where he's just like, no, I kind of like it. It's a beautiful place. It's, like, a beautiful stadium. It's pretty good. It just sucks. It's expensive and everything costs so much money to go to a fucking baseball game now. Which
are all valid points.
Exactly. And this is in, like, 1995. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So on September 6th, 1995, Wild Bill returned and led his Orioles cheer again in front of a sold-out crowd at Camden Yards. The crowd was there to see Cal Ripken set the record for consecutive games played, which started in 1982 during Wild Bill's peak.
Oh, okay.
In July...
Bookended by Wild Bill.
Yeah. In July 2007, when Ripken was inducted in the Hall of Fame, Bill was there and led a crowd in one last Orioles cheer.
Like, why?
Because he's just an old drunk guy. It's like 2007. 3 years later, or 3 years later, Jesus Christ, really, that's not appropriate. 3 weeks later, on August 20th, 2007, Wild Bill Hagee was found dead in his home by his roommate.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he was in his 60s, I think, at this point.
Yeah, that's pretty young.
It's still pretty young, yeah. It is. I'm trying to find exactly how old he was. So it was 2007, and I think he was born in 39. So, yeah, 39. So he was about 67, 68, which is, yeah. So, you know, he's a cabbie. He, like, never... I don't think he ever married, and he just... His apartment was just filled with, like, Oriole stuff, and obviously he has, like, everyone's autograph from ever.
Diagrams of how to spell letters.
He's like, how am I gonna do this?
How am I gonna do this R? This is, like, the crux of my whole existence. The franchise hinges on me fucking figuring out how to spell an R with my body.
And he did, and they won.
Yeah. I mean, E would be tough, too. Yeah. Actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, you can watch it. I don't have the internet right now. Yeah,
we're going to check it out.
Yeah, Rick Dempsey said to the Baltimore Sun in Wild Bill's obituary, "There will never be another like Wild Bill Hagee." And he's right.
He's right.
Yep. Very much.
I wish there would be, though. That would be cool.
First of all, we need to bring coolers back.
Well, yeah, that's the first step.
Because nowadays, in order to just drink nine or ten beers at a stadium, you got to spend,
$900.
So a cabbie's not going to, or an Uber driver, that your primary income. Like, I don't know if you're going to the Rogers Center and $150 just on beer on top of your ticket, on top of like going down there and shit like that.
Like, that's true. You like sneak a flask.
You can't be a working man hero nowadays because beer costs too much money. And you can't bring your cooler.
That's show the Wild Bills, man. Their capitalism has killed the Wild Bills of this generation.
He actually had a quote. So he like meets President Carter and President Reagan because, the 79 World Series and the 83 World Series, and it's in Baltimore, so it's close to Washington. Mm-hmm. And later on in the 90s, he's just like, oh, Reagan, I liked his films better than his presidency.
I like that quote.
So, yeah, this Wild Bill and the capitalistic death throes of baseball culture.
What a wild story that was, man. I've never heard of that guy before. Well, I haven't really looked too deep into it, but I've seen a lot of, Baltimore Orioles history here and there, like through different documentaries I've watched and stuff. And I don't know, I've never stumbled across Wild Bill. So thanks for telling me the story of a crazy drunk guy in Section 34 of Memorial Stadium.
Oh, man. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
What an act, though.
Yeah, that goes out to Justin McKinney, our mm-hmm. Orioles fan friend. Mm-hmm. I forgot to tag in a post a little bit back for our 100th episode. But either way.
Sorry about that.
This one's for you, buddy. I hope you enjoyed it. Edzie, where can people find us?
You can find us on Twitter, X.com, whatever you're calling it these days, @doingbaseball. And on Instagram and TikTok, @doing.baseball. And I got a personal Twitter that's not really too eventful, but it's @edsdobaseball.
And I'm @SeanDoBaseball, sometimes more eventful.
A bit more active than me. But,
yeah. Well, looking forward. It's baseball season. Have fun out there. And until next time, I'm Sean.
And I'm Eds.
And we were bringing you the baseball history.
Okay, bye.